This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Fine Dining, the search for the most mediocre restaurant in America, is a podcast where comedian Michael Ornelas is traveling the country, eating at all chain restaurants in search of the perfectly average 5.0 out of 10 dining experience, the objective middle threshold of where bad becomes good. Friend of the Doughboys, Marissa Pinson and John Glover were the most recent guests as they reviewed Costco's Food Court. It's a two-part episode that covers everything from discontinued menu items to how many Costco hot dogs they could fit in their mouths. Damn, I wish I was on that episode. I'd crush that. Head over to linktree.com/finediningpodcast, FINEDININGPODCAST, and click B's giveaway to enter a giveaway for an all expenses paid trip to your local Applebee's, the current front runner for the most mediocre restaurant in America at 5.02 out of 10 for you and up to three of your friends. And you could watch or listen to Fine Dining on your platform of choice while you're there. Enter by May 1st and the winner will be announced on the May 8th episode. Disclaimer, $50 will be provided for transportation along with a $200 Applebee gift card. I love doing those fast read disclaimer things. Go give Fine Dining a listen, the search for the most mediocre restaurant in America. What's up, shitheads? Welcome back to another episode of High and Mighty. It's me, your boy, standing 6'2", 295 pounds, maybe 294 because he rode a Peloton for the first time today. Standing 6'2" from the south shore of Nassau County, it's the number one fuck boy, Johnny G. All you gotta do is trust me. Joining me as always in the High and Mighty Studios, my newly signed co-host, Arthur Gamers. Arthur, give him a shout out. Also joining me in the High and Mighty Studio, the guy has been on this podcast a lot. We've been on podcasts together a lot. We've been on stage together a lot. It's the... I almost just called you the Grand Wizard, but that's why. I'm his wizard's apprentice.
Skip to the next episode, baby.
Gets happier. I got Sean Conroy.
Hello. It's so funny. When you said, here comes the intro, I thought you were going to play something. And you actually sat back for a second as if you were going to, like, you kind of relaxed for a second and sat back. But now I realize you were just gathering yourself. So you had the energy to do that.
I had to go Super Saiyan to scream that bullshit at the top of my lungs.
Yeah.
Oh, Conroy. Great to see you. Great to have you, bud.
Great to see you, too. Great to be here.
It's been a minute for the listeners. You and I have engaged quite a bit because our favorite show of all time, a show we did 10 or 11 episodes about on High and Mighty that Sean is there for most of, is now on HBO Max and people are messaging me. Finally.
Yeah.
Screamed about
it. It's back on the radar all of a sudden.
Yes. I'm so happy for the cast, the crew, for Tropper, for everyone, because now we can... I think people will discover Banshee a bunch because Cinemax, I think, was the limiting factor previously. Not for guys
right.
like
Who
you
the
and
hell
I.
Has Cinemax?
You have to be at least 39 and into
right.
action movies and softcore.
Right.
Which is
bingo, my Venn diagram. Yeah. I'm not into rom-coms or hardcore pornography.
I like softcore and action, baby.
Yeah.
But it's so... Already people who I've been telling about the show for years, like the people you know will like it, like the other action movie heads. Like my friend David just texted me. He goes, I'm finally starting Banshee. Holy shit, you're right. I go, watch three episodes, make it through three episodes, and then if you still like the MMA fights, the selling point. And he was like,
that is the clincher. Yeah.
He's like, just finish that, dude. He's like, that's why I'm texting you. And then at like 11 p.m. last night, I got a text. It's like, holy shit, the albino fight.
There are so many specific highlights. Well, it's funny because I teach a pilot writing class and it's a comedy, you know, sitcom class. And I still once in a while have them watch a dramatic pilot that I like. And so one class I had them watch Banshee.
Very premise pilot. Very premise-y pilot.
Exactly. That's exactly why, is because you have to see the backstory to understand the story. I hate premise pilots. I hate it when they go like, this is how the crew got together. It's like, it's always so boring. But with Banshee, you have to see all that to understand how this guy ended up there and why it's so complicated.
Because it is funny, complicated.
Yeah. And what was funny was the reaction of the students was not good to the pilot of that show. Like it was too cheesy. It was, you know, the sex was stupid, the, you know, all this stuff. And I was like, oh, you guys are wrong. You're never going to make it in this business. You know?
See, like, I think what you're touching on here is a little generational too. I feel like cheesy was like part of TV for our entire life. You know what I mean? Like now It's like TV is fucking art. And it's like for us, TV was cheesy. They did do holiday episodes of like the A-Team. You know what I mean? Like It was like TV was dumb.
But also, I also think that with a show like Banshee, because I heard that from people this iteration too, you know, as people are watching it on HBO Max and like, people from from my generation and your generation, our generations, because we're different. But you know what I mean.
Yeah, we're on the older side of society. Yes.
but people were saying, oh, you know, whatever. And it's like I think the thing that I like about that show is that it's completely 100% on purpose. Like,
yes,
it's supposed to be wild and fun and ridiculous and absurd, and that's what's enjoyable about it. They're not trying to be cool the way some shows were in the 70s and 80s and failing miserably at it.
Right. It's more like, and I love these shows growing up, and I think we'll be talking about a lot of different old hour-long action TV shows, but it reminds me of Hercules and Xena, you know, where you were like, they know that this is like funny that we're making. It's like, it's not like the mythology of Hercules is very important to this show. It was just like, no, isn't this fun? She like does a flip. It's tongue in cheek. Like, you know, it's so clearly this and blank. Like, and that's what I think Banshee does well. And a lot of my favorite programming these days, I was saying this to someone, my favorite movies seem to be made by people who love the same type of movies as I do. Uh-huh. And I feel like, when TV shows are being made, we're like, no, we're just trying to make blah. We're just trying to have. And I think that's why the success of The Mandalorian, you can like track it back to that too. Cause The Mandalorian, if you're a fan, is.
Haven't seen it, unfortunately.
Oh, shit. Oh, we got to get you my Disney Plus login so you can check it out.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think you would like it because it's just like Kung Fu, The Legend Continues. It's like he travels. It's a Western. He travels from town to town. And then there's like a loose narrative like Banshee, but then there's still Monster of the Week, Adventure of the Week, Heist of the Week episodes. And it's just like, that's a classic structure that fucking works. And then map Star Wars specifics over the whole thing. And it's fucking one of the most popular shows of all time.
My feeling like with Banshee and with shows, you know, shows like that, that I watch is, instead of sitting down, because, you know, believe me, I'm 100% appreciative of art TV shows as well. But with a show like Banshee, I feel like the writers sit down and go, what's the most fun way we can possibly tell this story and the most fun we can have with it along the way? And I appreciate that. Instead of being like, this is serious shit. We need to take it seriously.
Right. You know? And then also we have a little bit of inside Hollywood, inside baseball. We interviewed Tropper, so the creator of Banshee. So we know he's a martial arts guy. He grew up doing martial arts and he wanted to make an action show. And they care about the fight choreography and they care about the stunts and they don't care so much about trying to be cool or be like an interesting esoteric show. And I think their focus is just in the right place where it's like, look, we're going to make badass characters. We're going to create out of a whole cloth, a badass character who just arrives, and you have, and our main badass character fights that main bad, that new badass person. And it's a good fight. And you're happy.
Immediately when you say that, I think of two very specific episodes on that show. I mean, there were so many great ones, but the first two that pop into my head are the British guy who compares himself to Hood on that show. And they have a,
They fight in the middle of the highway.
Yeah. In the middle of the highway.
And he's like a Jason Statham ripoff.
Yeah.
He's
just like exactly. He's an assassin, basically.
He's a stud, bald British guy with a 5 o'clock shadow. And it's like, just like Sheriff Hood is, because he's like our Americans, even though he's not American. He's
black. And the guy even says, I think, I mean, I haven't seen it in so long, but I feel like he says something like, you and I are both the same. We're different from everybody else, or something right. like yeah, that. Yeah. You know,
it makes total sense. That's a great fucking fight from that.
But a great, like, you know, there's such good little things. Like at one point, you know, they're fighting in the middle of the highway, and the truck is about to come and run them over, or run him over. I can't even remember, but somehow it misses him at the last second. Like, instead of just doing the normal thing of like, oh, they get hit by a truck, it's like it just misses him. And then he later, and I'm sorry, spoiler alert, you know, don't listen.
But Sheriff Hood dies.
End of series.
The lead of the show dies in episode six.
No, but the guy gets decapitated by another truck a moment later.
It's so cool.
And then the other one I'm thinking of is the guy in the truck. Do you remember that bad guy on that show?
That's the... Wasn't the big heavy set guy who had like the mobile office in the.
Yes, yes. You don't even realize at first. And then you realize that he's in an 18 wheeler. Like he's.
That's been moving the whole time. Yes. They just keep cutting to the interior of his office. And it's like comic book shit, but it's played in the world of reality.
Right.
Banshee is the titular town in Pennsylvania that the show takes place. And the show, Banshee, Pennsylvania, for those of you who don't know, I don't know anything about the real Banshee, but this Banshee.
Or if there even is a real Banshee.
It's the most diverse criminal enterprises to ever work together. It's like,
again, it was like, Native what are the American, most fun things we can have there? Yeah.
Yeah. It's Native American bad guys. There's Italian bad guys, Amish bad guys, Black bad guys, Latino bad guys, biker bad guys. There's a biker attack at an Amish farmer's market. There's so much shit in the show that makes it like G.I. Joe, where it's like there's a group of Amish, like, mafia that square off against like the Native mafia, and then in later seasons, and this is not a spoiler, there's just a full-on commando army base also in Banshee,
top secret like special forces base right nearby. But even that, like, I feel like that was the episode where they shot. There was one episode they did where everybody had like a GoPro on, and the whole episode was shot through their GoPros. So even that, it was like, what's the most fun way we can have these guys attack this, you know, commit this robbery or whatever? Yeah,
it rules. It's such a cool thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think my love of action, obviously my love of action TV stems from loving action movies as a kid and then having that sort of any port in the storm mentality of trying to watch TV in a pre-streaming, DVR, nothing. The childhood was like, this is the five things that are on TV right now.
Mm-hmm.
Dig in on one of them. So as a kid, you'd be like, oh, at least the A-Team might have guns or a car crash. And it's like, I'll put that on. And then you watch, if you're a fucking 10-year-old watching the A-Team, the highlight is the credits. A lot of these shows, like we talk about this on Action Boys, Knight Rider, A-Team, MacGyver, these are shows where the credits are so much better than the show
because
itself.
You see all the highlights of the stuff they do.
Yeah, you see all the third acts from 10 episodes.
Previous episodes, yeah.
And then you watch a 44-minute MacGyver episode that takes you like, oh, this explosion with a surgical glove blowing the fire extinguisher happens in minute 40.
Until it's a lot of dialogue. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. That's all they had the budget for.
Michael Knight only jumps one barrel with Kit, but you think you're like watching the whole show hoping, and it's like, no, in this episode, he's undercover as a masseuse. And you're like, oh, I don't give a fuck about this.
Right.
But those are the shows were so cheap, you know, fucking A-Team is like live action G.I. Joe, just thousands of rounds fired per episode. No one's ever hit. The rounds are like melted down nails from a construct. They're always taken, kidnapped, and like put in like, all right, you're in this random factory that has a bunch of different.
I guess we're going to have to build a gun out of a sawhorse and a tube.
So frequently just armoring up some vehicle to drive through something and firing at people. I love it.
Yeah.
I love it when a plan comes together.
I was trying to think about, because for me, I mean, again, I'm older than you. So I think for me, we did not have cable TV when I was a kid. First of all, I didn't have cable. And second of all, I wasn't allowed to watch TV for the most part.
Damn.
We would get the TV guide, not the TV guide, but from the newspaper, whatever the weekly supplement in the Sunday paper was with the TV listings. And we had to decide at the beginning of the week what were the 2 hours that we wanted to watch that we were allowed to watch that week. That was the rule.
Oh, shit.
In my house.
Talk about gamifying stuff. Next thing you know, like, and you have a lot of siblings, right?
I have 4 younger brothers. Yeah.
It was hard enough with 2 younger brothers and having to choose TV.
But I think by the time some of the younger ones came along, those rules had gone out the window.
We can do a whole episode about being the oldest brother where you're like, we're allowed to smoke pot now? I was grounded for fucking 2 years.
I was grounded once when I was 19 years old.
I got grounded when I was 16 and I had a 17-year-old girlfriend. I'm like, I can't come over for a month. And we're having sex. I'm like, I just started having sex like 3 months ago and I got to take a month off. All I could think about is fucking.
I look back at that and I'm like, I was 19 years old and I let them get away with saying, you are grounded for the week. You can't do these things. And I'm like, how did I even? But anyway, I think for me, it started with Star Trek. Like that was the first show that I was obsessed with. And of course there were always, you know, those Kirk fist fights on Star Trek
the doughy haymaker fights. Yeah.
He would always like hit people over the back with both hands like this.
Yeah, the axe handle from wrestling. My dad one time said, Johnny, do yourself a favor. Don't ever intertwine your fingers when you go to hit somebody. Cause he said he did it in a fight when he was younger and sprained
broke his fingers.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's like, which totally makes sense.
Yeah, of course. He goes, go like this. And I'm like, oh, right, still right. Do it.
And then for a long time after that, I mean, you know, it feels long now. It probably wasn't that long at the time. The big ones for me, and again, this was the 70s, were Chips.
Hell yeah.
And Dukes of Hazzard. Like those were the two shows that we watched every fucking week when they were on, you know?
Yeah, Cars, man. Cars, yeah. Motorcycles, that shit.
And Chips, every episode of Chips started, I could be wrong about this, but this is how it seems in my head. Every episode of Chips started with a giant freeway pileup. Like it was just, you know, somebody would crash into somebody, then another car would come along and drive up onto that car and drive on its side for a while. And then a truck would skid in from behind.
I
and
it love was just that like, shit.
Metal, you know, carnage, you know.
And you know it's like, guys, we need to have a crash this week. Let's get the stunt team. They're thinking they maybe want to do a semi-trailer. It's like, oh, that's great. Let's do it. Didn't we do a semi-trailer like a few episodes? Oh, yeah. Let's forget. Let's do a school bus. Get the school bus.
Right.
Hollow out the school bus or whatever. Yeah.
Although I have to say, unlike a show like Banshee, where there is so much attention paid to those details, I feel like on a show like Chips, they were like, we did do it this season, but it was like 4 episodes ago.
Let's just do it again.
Let's just do it again. Yeah. You know,
funny you mentioned Chips and Dukes of Hazzard because you're right. We're close in age, but that's our age difference. But those shows were still running when I'm watching the next generation of shows, and still any port in the storm. You know, I have an hour that I can watch TV today in between my mom and because I have no agency in my life because I'm a child. And it's like oh, what's on right now is Dukes of Hazzard. And you're like, well, this is better than like clicking through or Oprah or news or sports. So you find yourself watching a lot of those shows like Gilligan's Island. I watched so much of as a child because it was just like, this is always on. And watching TV was better than like engaging with the outdoors or your friends, right, or whatever.
You didn't have – there was nothing else to watch, so that was the thing that was going to – it wasn't like you could just pick up your iPad and scroll through a bunch of movies or whatever. Right,
and it's like I'm 8 years old being like – I. Gilligan's Island is fun, I guess. Like, I'm like, why and, do I and, like and this?
They did some great, great action stuff on Gilligan's Island.
That was, they made a radio out of coconuts. That shit got so heightened by the end. It was so much fun.
Yeah.
But I think that's what's missing. Like, I feel like a lot of the hour longs that are being made now are like personality driven, like mystery of the week of like, it's, and I don't watch these shows, so I apologize if some of these are actually, I'm sure.
You're talking about network television, right?
Yeah, the
now.
Network hour longs right now, yeah. Like shit like The Blacklist, where it's like, we get James Spader, we create this fun character, and we, you know, pay him a fortune and shoot him weekly. Like, the men, like a lot of these procedurals fit, but they're less action-based. They're less
not action, yeah. More... it's more suspense thriller or something.
Yeah, it's more
like that.
Crime or mystery. Mystery. Yeah. It's like more solving because it's lower budget. I mean, it costs less to do that than it does to do big action sequences. But
unless the mystery you're solving is how do you blow this shit up?
Yeah. How exact? We have to get to the bottom of how we blow up this ship full of fireworks. Ooh, hit me right in the feels. Feels premium CBD, that is. Feels, F-E-A-L-S, is a CBD that naturally helps reduce stress, anxiety, pain, and sleeplessness. Put a few drops under your tongue. I do a few drops in the morning with my cold brew and then a few drops at night with some other pre-bed ritual stuff. If you're like overwhelmed by the idea of CBD, which is still possible in 2021, Feels offers a CBD hotline to help guide your personal experience. No hangovers, no addictions. It's all natural, blah, 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 blah. You know, all that fun stuff that you've heard me scream about time after time on this. And I'm a fan. I highly recommend you join the Feels community to get Feels delivered to your door every month. You'll save money on every order and you could pause or cancel anytime. Become a member and get 50% off your first order. Start feeling better with Feels. Become a member today by going to feels.com/mighty and you'll get 50% off your first order with free shipping. That's feals.com/mighty to become a member and get 50% automatically taken off your first order with free shipping. That's feels.com/mighty. These show, I feel like not shows I can only like a show I want to watch, but I know I'll be let down by is like Navy SEALs or SEAL Team, whatever the like the David Boreanaz like.
Right.
CBS.
Well, I mean, to that point, we both did watch a little bit of that show. I think it was a History Channel show, yeah, right?
Yeah. And it was just like about the drama of being a Navy SEAL.
and that was what was so interesting about that show to me was not that it was good, but that they were trying so hard to make it more than an action show. In other words, instead of just making it like the SEALs go and they rescue this guy or they shoot these people or they do, you know, it was like, this is what this guy's home life is like.
Yeah.
And this
and
is
one
why
of his
he's
teammates
fucked up
is
about
fucking
it.
His wife and he's divorced. Right. And it's like, I'm like, no, this is not what I'm looking for. And I'm looking for that, but that's got to be the secondary thing. The first thing I want is flashbangs, blanks being fired, right. doors being breached with shotguns. Like, that's the shit I'm tuning in for.
And I feel like if you're going to do that dramatic stuff, it has to be done. That does have to be the first thing you're doing. Like, that can't be an add-on because it just makes it look stupid, which was the problem with that show was like, it's not just all this action stuff. It's also this serious drama stuff, you know,
right?
which is hard to pull off by itself, much less as a secondary thing to
right,
now we
I'm
have to go
on
to
top of,
Kriatvia in Eastern Europe and, you know, kill these guys who got a rogue nuke out there.
Right. Now you are that hypothetical phrase you threw out for a plot line. Does remind me of another one of our favorites.
I know what you're going to say.
It's such a lob because we're talking about, we're talking around a show that is the show we wanted to watch. And that's Strike Back on Cinemax.
Yes. Yes.
Which is very similar to Banshee, but blown up to like a global level, and it's like guns instead of fist fights, really. It's like,
right. And
it's
and,
a lot of blanks and that. Grenades. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's it's a lot there's of no, blown there's up almost trucks no story. In random yeah. deserts. Yeah.
Right. It's not like they have to go to the casino and stop these guys or rescue these guys. It's just they're focused on who's the next group of people that we need to
You won't
murder.
Believe what Middle Eastern guy got a nuke now. Yes. Guess what? That nuke is now in the hands of a random Eastern European guy. They kill him. Now the
and
nuke?
It turns out those guys are involved with a bigger syndicate exactly. that may be partially global.
And then, of course, and there's a mole inside Strike Back. Every time. What is it? What were they called themselves?
Section 20.
Section 20. Every yeah. time it'd be like, someone's a mole inside of 20. It's like, we're on our own. It was like Ghost Protocol over yeah. and over again. They played that plot line every season, and I didn't even care.
I will say, for that show, the thing that I appreciated that, because that show lasted 9 seasons.
That's so nuts. And there's like, because I watched a few seasons, then there was like a prequel season that the BBC right. did, and then they did a few more seasons with a new cast, and that's when the shark had been jumped in my book.
Right. Well, that's what I was going to say is what I appreciated that about that show, not so much while I was watching it, but when I started to watch a little bit of those later seasons, is I think the thing that really had that that really worked for me on that show was not just the action level, but just the rapport between those two guys, like their sort of rivalry, friendship, buddy, cop kind of thing. I mean, they weren't cops, obviously, but
that was the dynamic.
The charisma like, that those two guys
had. Why don't you do the
hand
to hand this? Yeah, I love it. Yeah, like, why don't yeah. you do the fist fighting this time, Conroy? Oh, why? Because I lost last time. Like that kind of
dumb
alpha kind of. And I love.
And then they tried to do that with. I mean, obviously, that's all of those shows try to do that with everybody. But they tried to do that in later seasons with different guys, and it just did not
it wasn't
work
the same.
At all.
I know? Will say I like the Kiwi or Aussie woman from the later seasons, the short
with the
brunette.
Weird haircut.
Yeah, with like the half.
Yeah.
She was a fun character.
Uh-huh. And
also, Strike Back is a Cinemax show, so it is a lot of guns, but there is a lot of...
I love the way you describe it about the sex stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, it's got like a lot of undercover missions in which people need to fuck, and I don't know how they get away with it, but I've rarely watched sex scenes in movies where you see the person come or see the person... you see the person at least enter.
Like, the initial moment, like you're very aware of the initial moment of penetration.
Always. The show really lets you know when it's like, the woman's like, and it's like, first of all, it's rarely like that with me. And secondly, this is intense because 1 minute ago, this guy threw a grenade into a boat.
He is living life to the fullest right now.
And it was so fun. They always had beautiful studs and hot women in that show constantly. And then in later seasons, characters were bi and stuff. It was so fun. It was like, they were like, yeah, we know we're going to keep fucking throughout this show.
Yeah. But
this show also featured huge action set pieces that were slightly limited by their budget, but like the sort of like down and dirty practical effect look of everything. Like, was just so, it's so hard to explain because like, they're obviously just shooting in like Eastern Europe, like we're just in Bosnia and like
Hungary or someplace
like
that.
Yeah, an empty business park.
Right.
And it's like, oh, there's just a random old looking truck parked there. It's like, we know for sure this thing is blowing up in like 2 minutes, but they did actually blow shit up, which is the highlight. And like, cause a lot of these shows, and especially because I'll watch like foreign action movies and stuff, and they'll do like the digital fire and digital explosion,
which is so obvious.
So obvious. Digital blood splatter, not a fan of either, even in like the cool, gritty action movies.
Well, here's it's funny that you say that, because when you said the thing about they did a prequel season, which I thought was weird on, I mean, it was good on Strike Back. They had in the first season, Richard Armitage, who was, who was he in Lord of the Rings?
He's in The Hobbit.
The Hobbit. He's Thorin Oakenshield in The Hobbit. But he gets killed very early on in the first season of Strike Back. And then later on, it might have been the second season, I don't remember, but maybe it was like the third or fourth, they do an entire season of what led up of about him, of what led up to him being killed in that season. And I thought that was an interesting choice, that they clearly had so developed that backstory in their minds that it was worth devoting an entire season to that.
Yeah.
And you're talking about digital effects, and that reminds me of another of my favorite action shows, which I can't remember if you watched it or not, but Spartacus on Stars, in which they do like a cartoonish level of digital effects. But on that show, I feel like it totally works.
It's like part of the world. It feels like. And they're sort of built in that it is 300 adjacent. It is cartoon adjacent.
I was thinking about that. It is very, it doesn't look exactly like 300, but it is very similar in some ways in that cartoonish aspect of it.
Spartacus is a little older than the shows we're talking about too. Yeah, and I feel like that was more a sign of the times of like, we could do digital blood. And I think if you're going to do digital blood, trying not to look realistic and trying to look crazy is the answer.
Right. They totally embraced it. But that was another show where they had the first season and then they did a prequel season of how did this guy end up running this school for gladiators. So it's just weird to me that these shows are like so enmeshed in their own world that they can go backwards and forwards and still find interesting stories to tell.
I feel like going backwards for origin stories is like an old comic book trick, because then you're not beholden to the continuity you've already created.
Uh-huh.
And you can get like some of those, the thing I hate most in entertainment, like those prequel, like origin story. Han, what? I'm alone. Okay. How about Solo? Like those dumb things that creators love to shoehorn into their shows. It's like, hey, this Falcon, it's like a millennium, isn't it? It's like, yeah. Okay, guys, shut up. But that being said, I think also going back to origins lets you have, if you're going to do a prequel season, you could be like, hey, major actor B and major actress A, want to do one season prequel? You won't even have to do later. So right. Like there's a little bit of like some behind the scenes.
And the show is already moderately successful. So you're it's not going to fail. And, you know, and unfortunately in Spartacus' case, it was a practical decision too, because the actor, the star of the first season of the show who played Spartacus was dying of cancer at the time.
Right. I told that totally.
And so they decided to keep the crew on and keep making stuff, and ultimately ended up recasting him with a guy. That was weird too, because I was like, how could this guy be as good as the other guy? But he ended up being great. You know,
that's awesome. Yeah, I only watched it a little bit because Tiff was working at Stars at the time, so I like happened to catch it a few times or hear stories about it or whatever. One thing I do remember hearing was there was a little bit of drama, because there was one scene that they filmed where in the background, having nothing to do with what was going on,
right,
a little person had a dildo on their head and was putting it in between a woman's legs, like strapped to his head, and was like head fucking a woman, and it was in the background of a scene.
Well, my understanding, and I don't even know, probably I read this somewhere while I was watching the show, but it was shot down in New Zealand, and a lot of it is intended to show the decadence of Roman society. Like here they have these slaves that are fighting to the death just for purposes of entertainment. And, you know, it's about the decline of the Roman Empire. But my understanding is so they would have these big sort of feast scenes and orgy scenes. And my understanding is that they hired like sex clubs that were down in New Zealand to be the extras in this scene, just to do whatever sex stuff they wanted to do in the background.
Hey, let your freak flag fly. Yes. We're paying SAG extra rates. You can fuck for $160, $180 if we put fog in there.
Yeah.
That's fun as hell.
Because
I would love
crazy
to be like, on a set where the extras are always the weirdest group of people on a set. There's always pockets of weird people in any big production. Extras is a kind of good gathering place for some real crazies. And then adding that they're all a set. I would love to work on Spartacus and be like, I'm going to go hang out with the extras. Those guys, they're going fucking crazy in the green
room. Yeah. Yeah.
Sucking and fucking in the trailers and shit.
Well, that's also a weird, you know, what I didn't realize until I had, cause you know, any acting I've done in Hollywood has been not extra, but extra adjacent. Like,
right. Same.
Yeah. So I'm like with the extras, but I have one line, you know, or whatever.
And you get that one moment when they're like, Sean, you know, electrician, you're our electrician. Right. All right, come with us. And you go, and every one of the extras is like, it's like the Toy Story characters, the claw. Oh, yeah. He's chosen for a full SAG day rate.
I literally had, I worked on War at Home, Michael Rapaport's show. And I had, actually had three scenes on that show, which by the time they shot it was cut down to one line, I think.
Yeah,
exactly. And you have to justify it in your head of like, these are just writer's decisions. Like, it's just because I'm not important to the story. It has nothing to do with my acting at that rehearsal that we did yesterday.
Yeah, and that's, you know, the scary shit. That's where you can easily unfold yourself.
Right. But when I was on that show, I had my own trailer. Like, all the extras were sitting in folding chairs, and I had my own trailer, and it was just so amazing to a couple of these people. Like, how did you get that? How did you get to that? And I was like, I don't know how to explain this to you, but like, I am basically you. We are the same. Like, don't, you know,
I'm not special. Yeah.
Right. But what I realized when I was doing some of that stuff, I mean, this was particularly in a show I did for Spike where it was a Matt Walsh and Ian Roberts show called Players.
I remember when that came out.
And I was sitting at the bar the whole time. Like, the whole thing took place in a bar. And I was a character, but I was like sitting at the bar with all the extras who were hanging out at the bar the whole time. And I was like, holy shit, these people are fucking crazy. Like, they're having these conversations about what they're going to do afterwards or where they're going to meet up or who's going to do what and whatever. And I was like, and they did this all the time. This was just a thing that they did on a regular basis, you know?
I got to say, I'm pulling back on the blanket extras are weird. Everyone that works in Hollywood is a little weird. Extras are in a large group and are actors, so they're forthcoming, they're chatty, they're talkative, so you hear a lot. I'm assuming the sound guy is also a fucking freak, but he doesn't talk to you as much as all the extras do. So what I'm getting at is like, it's more about they're more readable. Like, yes. They're like, hi, I hope to someday play a dead body on, you know, and it's like
more on the surface. Yeah.
And it's I was technically an extra on 30 Rock for a few years. We had like slightly better treatment because we were UCB people and Tina wanted us to play the writers.
Right.
But we're constantly roped in with the extras. And then on 30 Rock, the extras are all crew characters because it's about a show about a show. Right. So you'll be at Crafty talking to some dude with like a headset and a tool belt.
Thinking you're talking to the AD or something. Yeah.
You're like, oh, this guy's like one of the carpenters. And you're like, blah, blah. And then he just says something like, well, I got to get home and feed my snake tonight. And you're like, oh, right. You're a fucking extra, you freak.
Right. Right. But, you know, people have to make a living, I guess.
Yeah. No judgment. I did it. Yeah, it's good. It's money. It's a life.
I was an extra on Malcolm X back when Spike Lee shot that.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Oh,
that's awesome.
It was an open casting call and I went and because I was going to be an actor in Hollywood and that was the way to do it was to go to an open casting call. And
now it's do exercises on Instagram until you get asked to be in a Disney show.
Right. But I still remember I worked 14 hours and I think I made $30 for the day because it was non-union. So that was the last time I did that.
Hey, at least you were on your feet in the cold New York street for that 14 hours.
Yeah, exactly. And got a lot of screen time.
I'm going to look for you. I'm going to watch Malcolm X again. I watched it last night, but I wasn't looking for you. So I'm going to watch it again tonight.
It's hard to miss me.
The idea of like a new action TV series coming out is so thrilling, but I think the only way we're going to see something like that is via Star Wars and Marvel, unfortunately.
You think it's just that big at this point that
I just feel like other shows are going to be aiming, other places are going to be aiming to do like lower budget, easier to do stuff. And it's like, who's going to make big budget action TV series? No one but Loki and fucking, you know, Mandalorian and Jedi Academy or whatever. All of those shows.
Right. I mean,
that's
my
fear, because I want more. And also it's a weird time to like want cop shows, because it's like maybe cops, because I, you know, I've watched every episode. Bosch is not action necessarily.
It's funny. I was thinking about that. There are some shows that are like action adjacent.
Yeah.
And like a little, because I was thinking about shows like, I mean, this is definitely not an action show, but there is like Deadwood, which is like an all-time classic show.
One of the best.
But does have action elements to it, you know?
Yeah.
Or Rome was another HBO show, which
I never watched that one, but yeah,
it's great.
Yeah, and The Wire, like these kind of show, they're like, you know, that I think the derogatory term people would throw around is like dad shows. They're like dad shows, and I have extreme dad taste for when it comes to entertainment.
I guess I do too. If that's a stereotype that
I think I've heard before, is like Bosch is for dads by dads, you know,
right,
what I mean? Because it's like the male lead is 58 but is ex-Vietnam and Gulf War, whatever, you know, inexplicably. No idea how old Titus Welliver is in the show.
Yeah.
But we like those shows where it's like an older man who's capable because he's street smart and connected and has, and it's like, it's that stupid male fantasy of like, look, I'm overweight, have high blood pressure.
I can still do shit.
Yeah. But I'm pretty fucking smart and I have connections, and using my know-how, I could solve cases and fight people. And like,
and yeah, exactly. You know what? If it comes to throwing the hands, I know my way around.
Yeah. Hey, you know? I'm a big guy, aren't I? Like that attitude that these shows give you, like make you feel like a 80s blue collar dad. but Bosch, I love. Oh, so I was saying about Bosch.
Yeah.
Watching the last season of Bosch, where it's like he's in trouble for previous cases where he potentially fudged evidence, and he's like going outside the law and stuff. And I'm like, why am I rooting for this guy? Like, he's doing things I hate in society and shit I tweet about that I don't like about cops.
Right.
I'm like, yes, but this show, and I'm like, oh, it's copaganda, not to, you know, use a buzzword, but that shit does work.
It does. Yeah. And it also, you know, it also speaks to another problem with television, which is it's really hard to sustain something for an extended period of time.
For sure.
Until, I mean, even Banshee, which I loved. I mean, remember that last season, it was like, what the fuck is going on?
It was the weakest season, and maybe it's even more obvious to us because that was the season we were like, let's do a weekly episode of High and Mighty about the new Banshee episodes, and they'll come out the day after they air or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And then like Cinemax got involved and was like sending us guests, and we got, so they're probably somewhere on this feed. You could probably go back and find, like, we had
all the people. Yeah. Yeah. We had Tropper. We had the stunt coordinator. We had some of the actors on.
Yeah. We had some of the directors. We had the guy who plays the neo-Nazi, who's working like a ton these days. The guy who
became a cop.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. The ex-neo-Nazi.
Paul Walter Hauser was tweeting about him the other day about what a great actor he was.
Yes, yes, that's where I saw it.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's the dude.
Yeah. And I still, I mean, that was such a vivid moment on that show. And it speaks again to, you know, how wildly over the top the show was, but in a way that made it interesting was that guy, that character showing up with his swastika neck tattoo to apply for a job at the police station.
I know. And it's really funny that we like this character. And meanwhile, like an ex-white supremacist who becomes a cop is like what I think is maybe, you know,
the worst
indicative
thing
of what's
going
wrong
on
with society.
Yeah. 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 Like,
and it's realistic and it's something that, but they play it. And it's the fucking show is, They just do so. And I can't believe we listed all the different criminal elements and forgot the white supremacists from earlier. Like, also in addition to Amish, the actual Italian mafia, elite level off the grid commandos, Native American mafia, Amish mafia, and the white supremacists are all there.
They just went down the list.
I know. They were like, what other? It reminds me of like old like 80s movies where like the gangs would be like almost like Bebop and Rocksteady. You know what I mean? Like they'd have like, they're like, this is what John Carpenter thinks a punk looks like.
Right.
Like, whoa. Right. Well, it's like, I don't think the five gang members getting off the bus in the Bronx in your New York based movie would be five goofy white guys and like with like mohawks and fucking boom boxes.
That's I watched just a few minutes of, not Get Shorty, but the sequel to Get Shorty.
Cadillac? No.
No. Fuck, what was the name of it? I can't remember. But anyway, there's a scene where, you know, John Travolta's character goes, now he's not going to be in the movies anymore. He's going to be a record producer.
Be cool.
Be cool. That's it. And, yes, and he finds this girl who's a singer, and he's bringing the record producer to see her sing, and she's like, I can just go into this community center. They let me use their piano. And they walk into the community center, and it was so funny to me because I think the movie came out in like 2005, and they walk into this community center, and there's a group of like 25 urban youths in there crumping to music, and they all have metallic face paint on, and it just reminded me so much of like those 80s movies where every punk had like weird face paint and like,
yeah, and like a weird mohawk and like a glasses that had one sunglass, one yes, non-sunglass, like the in the Back to the Future in Biff's cronies, the guy with 3D glasses. I feel like in the 80s, a lot of movies extrapolated out that guy into gangs where it's
yeah,
like
yeah,
the person has one catcher's glove on. It's like inexplicably.
He watched the Warriors. So now he's
baseball
furies or whatever. Furies. Yeah.
What about, are there any other, I clicking through Netflix, scrolling through, because we were kind of texting each other earlier on about recording this of like, oh, maybe we should both try to watch a show.
And of course, like we never followed through.
Yeah, of course not. I don't have time. Who, ain't nobody got time.
You had a Peloton bike delivered. I had to make coffee.
two things that are very passive, but took both of us our full day leading up to this moment. Two very easy tasks, it sounds like, but not for us. But so I was surfing through Netflix trying to see what's going on, and they have a ton of action adjacent shows, or, you know, like Vikings, Barbarians, Norse, like there's so many shows that's like, will this scratch my sword and shield itch?
Right.
And then I tried watching, I think it was Vikings that I tried watching a few months ago. I watched like 8 episodes. But they do really focus a lot on the drama, you know, yeah, what I mean? Because it's like that, and I know from doing TV now or being near other people doing TV, but like
extra adjacent.
Yeah, extra adjacent. You do know that like it's easier to film, like it's cheaper to film talking scenes. It's yeah, like we gotta shoot 20 of these episodes. We gotta have some fucking talking.
Right.
And so it's a lot of like, and then especially in action shows, and a good example of this, talking about action adjacent and being let down by it over the long run, Sons of Anarchy is a good example too.
Right.
FX had a few that were like, okay, this is hold the shield. This is giving me some vibes here. This is keeping about crooked cops and you still root for the hero the whole time. Something more propaganda that I loved.
Yeah. Yeah. It's weird because the shield was made no bones about the fact that this was a bad person.
Yeah.
From the first episode, the pilot, again, another show that I've had my pilot classes watch sometimes.
Great pilot.
Because the pilot is incredible, but it is very clear that that is a terrible person from the first episode. But then what happens is over the course of the show, there are certain times and certain situations where you need that terrible person to do the things that need to be done to enforce the law.
Yeah.
And it's, you can't, like, it is 100% propaganda.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, I was about to say, you can't help but think that that taught a bunch of people that are like, well, he's a piece of shit cop, but
He gets it done.
Yeah, I know. And it's like, that is even
in the pilot. Like in the pilot, they try to elicit a confession from a guy and they can't get it because he's kidnapped a little girl or something like that.
Right.
They can't get him to confess. And so they send Vic Mackey in with a telephone book and a bottle of whiskey or something. And it's implied that he just beats the shit out of the guy. But and the captain, who the moral center of that universe in the pilot, is like, I'm going to get Vic. I'm going to get him. But then when it comes time to find out what's going on, he's like, get me Vic. I need Vic to go in there. And, I know. Let's turn the cameras off. We don't want to see what he does. And yeah, that's a fucked up message, you know?
Yeah. It's so fucking weird. And this is the shit. And this is sort of indicative of other stuff, but like, and not exactly on topic, but I feel like a lot of people in charge and vocal in society and the government are people who were raised on the same shit that we were raised on. Yeah. But we have like the intellectual acumen, the bullshit detector.
Speak for yourself.
Yeah. I never used the word intellectual in speaking for myself, except for how do you spell intellectual? But like, I watch, like, I don't think that Paul Kersey and Death Wish is the answer. I know I'm like, but there are people. I mean, Trump's favorite movie was Bloodsport. You know what I mean?
I didn't even know that. That makes me like him even less.
I know. It's like the fact that we have to say, I think it was Ian Carmel tweeted something like this way back in the day, but it just burned in my head. He's like, if you told me that there was going to be a president that has fucked porn stars and wanted to create a space army, I would tell you he's my favorite president ever. Yeah. But of course, it's this guy.
Turns out, yeah.
It's the fucking monster. It's the evil fucking monster. But that being said, I swear, I'll send you the article. I saw it somewhere, but he has an edited VHS copy of Bloodsport with the talking scenes taken out. It's just only the fights that he is on Air Force One with him.
I wish I had thought of that idea first, because now I can't do it.
Nah, bummer. I was going to fly around in Air Force One and reveal that it was my office the whole time when I eventually fight Hood. But I feel like a lot of these shows are what we were raised on, because where I'm from, Long Island, and in New York in general, there's a sort of like, Long Island especially, is like a sort of like police worship. And everybody wants to grow up to be a cop, carry a gun, stop crime. I want to work out so I can handle myself in a fist fight and blah, blah, blah. And I think it just like, we've gone too far, like in the love of that and like in the love of military violence and stuff. And I think all these movies that are propaganda, whether it's U.S. feed military, yeah, they feed that. And some of us could be like, I like watching Spartacus Blood in the Sand. I now will go teach my writing class. And then some of us watch Spartacus Blood in the Sand and say, like, I am a golden warrior here to defend the honors and virtues of mankind. It's like, whoa, we're different.
It's weird. Yeah, I do feel like there is an element of it. I mean, I do enjoy, I hate to say this, but I do enjoy the cartoonish violence of that stuff.
Me too.
It's like fun to watch that stuff happen, knowing full well that it is not real and not something that I would ever be a part of, you know?
I don't want to ever shoot someone.
Right.
I have my desire for like being in a movie carrying an AR-15. Yes, I will cop that I want to cosplay as these guys. Right. I will admit to that. And that's something that's wrong with me. And that's something that's another, probably a little, when you pull out to society wide, it's a little bit of a problem.
But it's also, but I also feel like that's part of like what makes you want to be an actor is like, are these other things you can inhabit, these other personalities you can be without actually having to deal with the repercussions of it.
Yeah, I'm not standing on the fucking WeHo City Hall with my fucking Hawaiian shirt and machine gun.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You're not marching up the steps of the Capitol building with your AR-15, are allowed to have.
I'm at home emailing UTA going, hi, I would also be down to have one line in a this is where my, and if anyone listening to this is working on these action series, is shooting a B action movie in Budapest right now, and you think you need like a big heavy set guy to play a heavy, a bartender, to be some comic relief, to get his neck snapped after one line. I want to be that person.
Yeah.
And I know I'm not that famous, but I have a little bit of a juice. He put random fucking people in these movies. Put me in one of them.
Right. Give it to Gabrus. Come on. Yeah.
I'm so ready for that. I'm ready to just shoot stuff that I want to shoot that is like humiliating and embarrassing, where it's like, yeah, Gamers is shooting some weird thing where he plays like an old Spartan warrior who's coming back to fight. Show is awful. It's pretty exploitative of him. And he's constantly nude and being berated on the show, but he's so pumped to carry a sword.
He loves it. He loves it. I don't know what's wrong with him. He just loves it.
No one knows what's wrong with him.
I wish we had 100 guys like him.
But that's the shit I want to do next. I want to play. I want to play in this world that I love so much. It's like I work in television ostensibly on paper. I say I work in television.
You have an IMDb profile.
Yeah, this last year would tell you otherwise. But no one can say I haven't been in 5 different College Humor videos. that being said, it's like I also love these action shows. How come I can't find like a way to be the funny guy in one episode of Warrior? I would love to be one scene in Warrior, play a racist cop who's another show I really liked is about how racist America was against Chinese people, that movie.
Yeah, that's another John Tropper show.
And another, it's great. It's even more martial arts focused because it's sort of loosely based on writings of Bruce Lee.
Right.
And the guy that they got to play Assam, the Bruce Lee sort of proxy.
Stand-in, yeah.
So good.
Yeah.
He's a really charming actor, a really talented athlete, and he's devastatingly handsome. Like he's like cartoonishly good looking.
Here's another, talking about like, why do I love these shows? And yeah, it's silly. It's absurd. I do enjoy the cartoonish violence, all that stuff. But like with Warrior, like, I guess I'm trying to say for me, sometimes, as you said, intellectual acumen. I would say it's like an intellectual exercise. So like when I watched Warrior, and the thing they do in Warrior is it's all about San Francisco and about Chinatown in San Francisco back at the turn of the 20th century. I don't remember exactly the time, but it's around that time.
Yeah, it's like early 1900s. Yeah. Or late 1800s, something like that.
And the way they do the show is that when the Chinese people are talking amongst themselves, they speak English fluently. But when there's white people around them, they switch to Chinese. And it kind of flawlessly goes back and forth between. And I just was like, that hit me so hard as such a fucking cool thing to do.
So smart. Like, so enjoyable.
Instead of like, I mean, I guess there's probably a million ways you could do it, but yeah, it was so seamless and so interesting.
Go one step further, they speak nearly unaccented English in the scenes where they're all supposed to be talking to each other in Chinese. And then when American characters are in the scene, they speak with accented English as if they are Chinese immigrants.
Right. So they're doing three different ways of speaking.
Yeah, exactly. There's three different styles. They're either talking in unaccented English, accented English, or Chinese, Cantonese, Mandarin.
To be clear, the unaccented, their Chinese accents are horrible. I could tell that. No, I don't know.
I have a lot to say about these Asian American actors' Chinese accents. Me and Sean Conroy weighing in.
But the unaccented English is because in those moments they're actually
speaking
Chinese. Chinese so to them, each other. So there's no accent. And I don't know. I just find decisions like that are so interesting to me.
It's like Hunt for Red October. They kind of do that in Hunt for Red October too. There's just like the moment where Sean Conroy is speaking like Sean Conroy. I watched this really weird cut. It was Malcolm X meets Hunt for Red October, Sean Conroy.
Here's the thing. We're going to take this submarine down.
Sean Connery is like speaking Russian with subtitles, and then at the end of it he's just like, and tonight we shall, and he just switches to English with a slight Russian accent.
Yeah.
And it's like the subtitles goes away and the rest of the movie is just in English on the boat, on the submarine. And it's very, and The other fun thing about Warrior,
I think if you're cool, you call a submarine a boat. You say, you know, like you're very familiar.
Get on
with
the boat,
it.
Bro.
Yeah, let's say, hey, look, we're gonna take the boat down underneath. You know, yeah,
Captain Nemo's boat. We're gonna jump on, go down 500 or so leagues. The Warrior is really fun too because it is a time period not shown on TV a lot, and it's right. like. It's sort of slightly post-Western in a way, but there is a Western episode.
There
in
is,
one.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
that's one of the
like,
best
again,
ones. Yeah.
Again, and I attribute this to Jonathan Tropper of being like, "What's the most fun we could have in this world?" So we're in San Francisco. It's the early 1900s, but there's still not far from there. Places that retain that flavor of
that
the
frontier.
Old West.
Yeah.
And so let's have them go to one of those places and have like a standalone episode that takes place there
with a
gunfight and a, you know, all the Western tropes.
And we see, what's his name? This Uncle June. What's his name? The
Uncle June. Yeah.
Uncle June. And then the who's his buddy? The guy who's like his way into the gang. Uncle June's son, whatever his name is. Little June or something.
Yeah.
June.
Yeah. Young June.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And Young June is such a cool character. And he's a real, like, his look is like rockabilly Asian martial, like, and he carries two knives or two axes. And it's such a cool vibe. And sorry, now I'm all over the place. But the highlight of Warrior for me, that finale of season two is got like a huge, or maybe it's episode 9.
I think it's the second to last episode. Yeah.
The huge street brawl where like the racists are storming into Chinatown. And then Asan and Young June look at each other and it's like, we have to defend Chinatown. And in this sequence, there's a random shot of like some little shopkeep defending himself from like a group of white racist people coming in to fuck their shit up. And he's got nunchucks and he's kind of not great with them.
Mm-hmm.
And then they get taken out of his hand. The guy turns around and it's Assam. And now Assam has been our Bruce Lee proxy the whole time. And if you're a Bruce Lee head, you love when he gets the nunchucks and Enter the Dragon or Fist of Fury when he gets them because he's so good with them. And we just get a straight up sequence, kind of like hero shot of Assam doing a little nunchuck kata and ending in that famous Bruce Lee nunchuck pose with like the fingers
right.
and the chain extended. And I am watching this alone. And I literally go, like clapping like, oh fuck, here
so,
we go.
So fun. Yeah. So, and, you know, again, it's like an organic moment to the story. It's like earned instead of just let's have him show off his skills with the nunchucks.
Right. But it's also, you know, a little bit of like, if you're doing the Bruce Lee thing, we should probably have a cool. Yeah. And that's what I like about it is that it works in the show.
Right.
And I guess the reason I brought that up, Sean, is because I think that's what I'm chasing in my love of action TV shows and movies is the moment where you go like, oh, here we go. It's on now. Or whole like another one that comes back in another show we were talking about is Strike Back. It's one of the earlier seasons. There's a scene where they're driving a plane. So a plane is escaping with the hatch open and they're in a Jeep and they're chasing it, or they're in a plane stopping a Jeep. But what's happening is they're having a casual conversation of like, well, we got to get, but pulling pins on grenades and throwing them out of the Jeep. And as like the bad guys are swerving out of just explosion after explosion. And I'm just losing it watching. I'm like, this is what I want in a TV show.
Yeah.
Guys casually having like, well, maybe if your aim was better while pulling pins, like having a basket of grenades at hand is like exactly the shit. And you could picture the Strike Back creators being like, that could be really fun because we could do this thing on the thing. It's like, oh, we can have we'll set up the crate of grenades that's in the back of the Jeep so these guys can play with that. It's like, I just love, there's always like a scene where it's like, have you operated a machine gun like that before? It's like, no, sir. And it's like, well, we know he's getting in it eventually. That's
right,
such a highlight.
Yeah.
Chekhov's grenade box.
Not Chekhov from Star Trek, but Chekhov from Russian literature.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. As in the Chekhov's gun.
Yes.
Conroy.
Yes.
Do you have any action recommendations or shit? Because this is what I'd like to do to end here. I would love to tell listeners of High and Mighty, the shitheads, if you haven't watched Banshee yet, Now's the fucking time.
100%.
It's on HBO Max if you have it. It's very easy. But I want the listeners to reply to the tweet that I'll put out for this episode, or that Ham Gabris will put out, with action shows they like that they're watching right now. New, old, whatever. I just need foreign, domestic. I just need Rex. I want to get to into some of these shows.
Right.
The one that everyone keeps recommending to me currently is Gangs of London, which is the guy who directed The Raid, made a action TV series for BBC about like criminal gangs or whatever.
Oh, cool.
And I could only find the first two episodes. I watched them for free on like the AMC app or something. But the remaining six or eight episodes are all on AMC Plus, like a paid monthly service. And I'm like,
a paid service at this point?
I'd rather pay the $20 to rent the season, to buy the season.
Yeah,
then pay $3 a month for 12 months to maybe have watched this one. Like,
right.
And it's just not for sale right now. So, but if besides Gangs of London, if anyone has any recos to throw out, please.
Mm-hmm.
And Sean, have you caught anything good recently?
Well, I'll recommend two things. And I feel like one, maybe they're both action adjacent, not necessarily 100% still action. And I think they were both Epics shows, which, who the hell has Epics? Nobody has that.
Not this guy. The one channel I don't have.
Keeping up my tradition of only watching stuff on networks that nobody else has. But one was a show called Condor. Oh, no. Sorry. That was not on Epics. That was on the Audience Network.
Even weirder.
Yeah.
It keeps getting weirder.
I think it's on Amazon Prime now, though. And I'm not sure if it's free or if you have to pay for it. But it's called Condor, and it's actually based on, I don't remember if it's based on the movie or based on the novel. Three Days of the Condor was the movie, and then 6 Days of the Condor, I think, was the novel. But it's the same story, but as a TV series.
Oh, that's like one of my favorite movies.
And it's really, again, I've only watched it once, so I can't 100% commit to saying it's great. But I enjoyed it the one time I watched it, and I do want to watch it again at some point, just because I always reserve judgment until I've seen things at least a couple of times. But it's, you know, obviously you know the beginning of the story, which is the guy goes out to lunch or goes out to get coffee or something. He works for the CIA. He comes back and everybody in his station has been murdered.
Yeah, he's like an analyst guy. Yeah.
Yeah, except for him. And then they're after trying to kill him. And that's it. That's the whole premise right there.
That's all you need.
Is he's trying to stay alive. And it's, you know who's great in it is Brendan Fraser, isn't it?
Oh, fuck. I had no idea. That's cool.
And what's his name from, I'm not going to think of his name. Anyway. A couple of really good actors and actresses are in it. And I think it was supposed to get a second season, and then I think COVID kind of put the kibosh on that. But that's one I would recommend. And then the other one is a show that was on – that I think this one definitely was on Epics. Or no, maybe it was HBO. No, sorry, maybe it was ABC. But it was a show called Berlin Station.
Oh, yeah. I've heard some people recommend that.
And I really enjoyed that as well. Again, some people you would definitely recognize. In fact, Richard Armitage is in that show as well.
Oh, awesome. I like him.
He's really great in it. And anyway, it's got some great actors, and the stories are fun.
So Condor and Berlin Station, I'm saying I haven't really watched a good action series lately. I guess The Mandalorian is their action adventure. Sean, we got to get you Disney Plus so you can watch it. I think you would dig it.
I've heard that from a number of people that I have to get Disney Plus for a variety of reasons.
Yeah, it's one of the most popular shows of all time. But
yeah,
and so you have a podcast that
I do. I have a podcast
coming back with another season.
Yes. In fact, you and I recorded an episode that we didn't actually end up recording. So that went
great. We did an
episode.
Yeah. For nobody. For me, you, and your producer.
Yes. And it was great. I
enjoyed myself. And we'll do another.
Yes. So my podcast is called Sean Conroy Gets Happier. I'm hoping to probably won't have started by the time this episode comes out, but will within the next week or two after that, and will be available in all the usual podcast places. I also publish a newsletter on a regular basis that some people seem to enjoy, other people seem to detest.
Find out which one you are.
Yeah, so go to my website, seanconroy.com, and you can subscribe to the newsletter there.
And you don't have to let Sean know if you love it or despise it.
But you can. I'm open to those conversations, especially if you detest it. That always gets me going. So those are my things. Those are the things. Oh, and I also have a podcast called The Long Shot that I've been doing for. Yeah, The Long Shot is back. We started it up again.
Hell yeah.
And it's been really fun. It's weird because I think we actually talked about this on the Phantom episode that didn't get recorded, but how much these conversations have become important during this time of isolation. So it's not just about the podcast; it's about connecting with the people that I enjoy connecting with. You know,
the Lo Show Po people.
So yeah, The Long Shot, and it's just been really good for my mental health to connect with those people on a regular basis.
Fuck,
you know?
Yeah, dude. Same. Just talking to someone for 1 hour a week about whatever dumb fucking topic is.
Right.
This is exciting for me. It's either this or I'm talking to my dog Unbroken for like 12 hours a day. So this is a nice.
You named your dog Unbroken?
Yeah. he was named Unbreakable for the M. Night Shyamalan movie. Uh-huh. And then Lady in the Water kind of tarnished it. So I switched him to Unbroken.
Invictus.
Hey, I'm a rugby guy. I love that's one of
oh
two
no
movies.
I think Invictus is broken but unbowed. It is actually broken.
Invictus is one of two movies in which Matt Damon plays rugby. The other is The Departed. There's a scene in which he plays rugby in the NYPD FDNY.
The departed,
Sean Conroy, thank you so much. Check out his podcast, Sean Conroy Gets Happier, and Long Shot Podcast. I always say Lo Shopo.
Yeah. You know I mean? No, that's the cool. Again, it's like calling a submarine a boat. If you're on the inside, yeah, you know that it's Lo Shopo.
The Venn diagram of someone cool is not only listens to Long Shot Podcast, but knows the fucking shorthand, and then also knows to call a sub a boat, baby.
Do you know that I got, I was going on tour in 2017, so I got custom license plates that said Lo Shopo, so that as I was driving around, you know, I was driving around the country for like 3 months, and I was like, oh, it'll be fun for people to listen to the show to see that I have Lo Shopo as my license plate. What I didn't really understand was that they would not arrive until I returned from being on tour. So now
you have them.
I've since gotten rid of them, but I did for a long time have Lo Shopo license plates just driving around Los Angeles where people must have been like, what the fuck is that?
Yeah, I love the dumb license plates here in LA. You get someone's like showrunner. You're like, oh.
Yeah. Oh, Larry David. Hey.
Number one on the call sheet. Gross. I'm at Gabrus on all social media. Check out Action Boys, my other podcast, or Gino Lombardo's show. And check out Gabrus.com or Gabrus.com/shirts if you want shirts and all that jazz. Thank you for listening. And bye, shitheads. I am mighty.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.
In a part of the world where there are no rules.
Holy shit.
Holy shit, guys. Holy I'm so pumped.
I definitely have not watched this since I rented it on VHS in 92.
Strangers united by the threat of death.
We got all the fucking major players. Seagal.
Vladimir Putin is a good man.
Arnold. Here, come. Give it to me.
I need you to cream pie me now.
Stallone.
People are loving this movie.
It's got a lot of heart.
You're mentally irregular.
Now. Somewhere, somehow, someone's gonna pay.
I would fucking love for my wife to like see me rip a guy's throat out.
But they didn't count on one thing.
This movie's fucking insane.
It's how you know it's a good movie. You have to do almost all the work yourself to figure it out.
Well, there's a fantasy component. Yeah. There's some sword fighting.
There's some lightning.
Bam, 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 bam.
There's a
new game in town.
You wake up after a few years, and then you don't even know who you are anymore.
We're going to be making Terminators. We're going to make a really great deal with the Xenomorphs.
What? I don't hate them, but I've been in a room here.
Yes, I understand.
This is now the 20th ending of the movie.
I am Dar.
I'm your dad.
Action, boys. Boys will be boys.
Subscribe here for bonus content and more free stuff from behind the paywall. To get new episodes, become a patron at actionboys.biz.
Do it. Do it.
Come on.
Do it now.